Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion around the first season of Carter, which is another Private Eye police procedural type show on WGN.
Yes.
Although it's a Canadian show, and clearly set in Canada, that was done originally by
Bravo up there, I think.
All right. This is another one where, in this case, a current TV celebrity in that universe who stars in Call Carter goes up after a breakup with his wife to his hometown in Canada to get away from it all during the summer hiatus. Good timing on the breakup. And winds up investigating crimes there with his childhood friends, one of whom has grown up to become a police detective.
And one of whom happens to strongly resemble one of the characters on Call Carter.
Yes, it's very clear that Carter has plagiarized his own life when talking with the writers for his show and whatnot. Now, this is another one, though, where a lot of the actors are familiar to us.
Yes.
The lead who plays Harley Carter, who is Charlie Carter on the Call Carter show, is Jerry O'Connell, whom we know from Sliders, My Secret Identity, and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
The detective is played by Sidney Poitier.
Mm-hmm.
The daughter of the other Sidney Poitier, because that's not confusing. She was in the revival of of Knight Rider, I believe.
Oh, interesting.
Among other things. They've all done a lot of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the other childhood best friend we know from playing Donnie on Orphan Black.
Yeah, Christian Brunn.
Yeah, and he does a great job here. They all do.
You know, one of the things that I watched the first episode with kind of a, you know, okay, I'll give it a try, because Jerry O'Connell's funny.
Yes.
So I'll give it a try. And what I liked was they took the time to think about the uniqueness and the personalities of the second tier characters.
They did. There's the people who are the housekeepers for his place up in Canada.
Those two bust me up every time they're on screen.
The wife of the couple, Dot, is always almost carrying around a shotgun. She's very acerbic and...
Well, now, let's stop for a moment and evaluate how they take their job as housekeepers to be.
Well, they are also the ones who raised him after his mom left, or died, actually.
But the housekeepers have moved into his house, and when he comes home, he lives in the guest house on his property.
Yes.
And one of the first things he says is basically, I'm not going to kick you out of my house that you live in.
Well, and it's your house is my house. Well, I mean, it's still my house. I still own it and stuff, but I'm not kicking you out. Yeah.
Which really sets the dynamic up from the start of kind of a who rules this roost? And the answer is Dot.
Well, and you've got somebody his show's been going on a good couple of years now. He's very famous, but Dot and Koji, the husband, they're not impressed.
Yeah, very, very true.
They don't think he's a good actor. They don't think he's... I mean, they've known him since he was a kid.
And they make no bones about telling him, I'm a better actor than you are.
Yes. So yeah. There's a lot of self-deprecating humor around the whole situation. And it was plausible how he got kind of set up to start helping solve crimes.
Well, and one of the things I liked in terms of how he ended up in the police department was not he finagled a favor or he pressed a favor. It was a mayor who saw an opportunity for publicity.
Yes. Yeah, and that's part of what made it plausible. I mean, TV plausible.
Well,
not
yes, yes.
Plausible. But because the chief of police was being just so derogatory to him, which is, go away, you bother me, kid, sort of a thing. Carter basically takes the position of consulting detective or whatever because he can.
Yes. Well, and because it's his only way to stay in the door. If the chief of police had been more tolerant and kind of you can stay for today, he probably would have felt no need to take up the mayor on the permanent offer.
Yeah. Well, and the other backstory aspect is they set Carter up is having been, for lack of any better reference, kind of that Encyclopedia Brown kind of child detective.
Yeah.
They had solved the case of who had killed his mother.
Well, and one of the things that comes up very late, and I think even in the final episode, is when he's saying, you know, that first time you're in the newspaper, it's an adrenaline rush, and you want to keep being in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of gives weight, if you will, to the fact that these three were in the newspaper when they were 12 for solving a crime, and they all reacted to it differently.
And it gives a possible explanation as to why he became an actor, became famous. It, again, that adrenaline rush or whatever.
Yeah.
And it also, when he was explaining that to me in that final episode out of the 10 for the season, it was a short season, but it was a turning point for the character because he seemed to have gotten over that need.
Yeah.
Because he was ready to basically torpedo his entire acting career by not going back to his show that was coming off hiatus.
Well, being on the show was fun. It was fun to pretend to save people. But what he discovered during these 10 episodes was it was rewarding to actually save people, to solve crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between creating the illusion and entertaining people versus having the actual substance and doing the real thing.
I think they could have built that aspect of the show a little better.
Yeah.
Because during a lot of the season, he comes across a bit superficial, a bit, you know, self-centered. And we don't really see that kind of getting chipped away by seeing the impact he's had on.
Mm-hmm.
We get that in the next to last episode with the camp and stuff like that. But that almost comes out of the blue.
Yeah.
And I felt the tone and the style of the final episode much more serious, much kind of darker take. Not really, really dark. But it was very happy-go-lucky early on.
Yes. Yeah.
But now that it's the murder of his mother's coming back and all of that, you know, he's got to deal with stuff. So I felt they could have made him, it was fun to, yeah, we did some good, to, wow, we really made a difference in somebody's life, to,
mm-hmm.
you know, he can't not do that sort of thing.
Well, and the times when we saw him kind of reacting and having those moments were like when his wife came to visit.
Yeah.
And things like that. So a lot of how he was reacting to things and feeling about things, we were actually seeing through other people's eyes, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
His best friends seeing him take things more seriously versus seeing him make jokes about everything.
I would say we've got, I mean, the character arc for him, which, again, I would have played a little differently, but it worked. We get a bit of a character arc for each of the two best friends. We even get a bit of one with the chief of police or whatever who warms up to Carter.
Yeah. I mean, you and I have talked, not on the podcast, just about there were multiple shows during the summer that were this celebrity detective thing.
Yes.
And I will not say this was the best written of them, because it was. But I enjoyed the character more than at least one of the others, where on another one of the shows, the second tier characters for me seem to be just kind of a one note. They're awkward with each other.
Well, in one of those other characters on that other show, we saw him only predominantly, I think with one episode as an exception, in one place.
Yeah.
It's like they never leave their roost, if you will. Whereas here, we got a ton of secondary characters. The coroner, one of the other forensics guys.
The other forensic guy cracked me up.
Yeah, because he was pretty hard on Carter. If we're not just magicians, you know? And they got a couple of good lines out of that. And because at first, again, Carter is doing the, well, in the show, this is where you'd have that gut instinct or whatever, and, you know, just pull something out. And
or you'd say, oh, and there's one more thing.
Yeah.
Or I can tell by looking at it.
All the things we've seen these sorts of people do every time on every show.
Yeah, yes. So
there were times the show was very much poking fun at the conventions of the genre.
Oh, yeah.
While sticking to the conventions of the genre.
Well, yeah, and they were doing, and maybe that's what I did like about the writing, they were doing a nice commentary on how the writing is done in terms of this is an act one moment and that kind of thing.
They did more of that at the beginning of the season than later in the season.
Yes.
That seemed to fall away.
Well, and for me, that was Harley getting more immersed in the real world and getting away from the illusions.
Yeah, yeah. It was nice when there was one episode where, in theory, the three leads are kind of on vacation, stumble across a murder, and most of the secondaries get a chance to kind of step up and help solve.
Yeah.
And then there was the other one where somebody gets murdered and some of the secondaries, particularly the best friend and Dot and stuff, step up in the corner to help solve the case there.
Kiki Loki. That one, and part of what amused me about that one is we now live in a society where most people can understand intense fandom.
Well, and what was fun about that is Kiki Loki was the mascot of a Japanese company, and Carter was doing a commercial, and the person who plays the mascot is killed.
Yeah.
And they start with the commercial.
Oh, and that was priceless.
You know, and then kind of pull back or whatever. And they did some fun stuff there. And these are typical TV mysteries that usually you can kind of figure out early on. This is the person who's either going to die or have done it.
Yes. This is the kind of show people don't want to watch with me because I'm the one who chimes in with, wait, based on the amount of dialogue they've had so far, either they did it or they're about to die.
Yeah.
But I felt the show did a pretty good job of giving us red herrings and plausible red herrings.
Yeah, there are usually two or three people. It's like, okay, this seems plausible. It could be them or, you know, it's not just here's the one guy.
Yeah.
Because when you get to the point of, okay, you're in the abandoned old town or whatever, and there's the barkeep and that's it.
Yeah.
Not well, that we've literally had that, but you know what I mean.
No, but like the Kiki Loki episode where we had, I was going to say three possibilities.
We had the director.
Yeah.
We had the stepmother.
Yeah.
And we had the two brothers who were trying to buy the company.
Exactly.
And very much, here's suspect A, B, and C.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did that in, again, it's standard kind of practice on a murder mystery or, you know, any mystery show kind of to give a few suspects.
But they played fair in how they introduced each of them. I think the stepmom got the worst introduction in that episode.
I would agree with that. It was a little cliche.
Yeah, but they, for the most part, they played fair in how they introduced them. They played pretty fair in how they gave them motives, etc. So structurally, it was a solid episode.
Well, if you ever got to one where it's here's the person who had every reason in the world to kill them, and here are two people who really have no reason at all, it'd be pretty heavy-handed, and it's like, well, it's got to be the one. You know, depending on what show, there have been a couple where it's less about who done it than how the hell did they do it.
Yes.
But this was one where they kept things moving. There was enough of a through line in terms of Harley having to rebuild relationships with his childhood friends. And with the agent he had showing up frequently, although not every episode, putting to bed kind of his acting career, which he was doing very slowly.
Well, the agent was one of the characters very early on that they used to show Harley hadn't gone full Hollywood, if you would. He was still a good guy at heart. Because he did something that basically got this junior agent fired. And within an hour, not only had he fixed it, he'd gotten the guy's job back with what amounted to a promotion.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, I may be temperamental, I may do something unwise, foolish, name it how you will, but my actions shouldn't have consequences and repercussions for others, and I do get
that. Harley was thoughtless, but not cruel.
Yes. Yeah.
When he made a mistake, he tried to make right.
Yeah.
And that you've got to have that kind of endearing quality to a lead character.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you've got to really love to hate them, and that can be hard to pull off.
Well, and there were several cases where he was out to solve them because he made a promise. You know, and it really was the truth matters. And it was, yes, justice is great too, but you know, I promised to find the truth.
The episode I really liked along those lines, because it veered from that, was when they found the snowmobiler dead in the summer. And his childhood best friend is a suspect. And his response is, we've got to help our friend.
Yeah.
Not cover up the truth, not any of that, but he couldn't have done it. And, you know, let's prove that out.
Yeah.
So they did a good job with that.
Well, and the end of that episode you alluded to earlier, and I think part of why they gave us the scene with the guy who ran the camp and Harley at the end of that was mostly because of one line of dialogue where Harley was saying, you know, I'm not really doing this just for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically he realized the camp played a major role in saving his friend Dave from going down a really bad path.
Yeah, yeah. The camp did well by a friend of his, made a big difference there that Harley couldn't do.
Yeah.
And this is a way to kind of pay that forward.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very big difference from the Harley at the beginning.
Mm.
Who's buying that same friend, here's a fancy coffee machine so you can make me the coffee I like.
Yes, yes.
The Cortado or whatever the hell yes. It was.
Yeah.
It's funny because the friend, Dave, had the coffee truck, which by the end we were being told he was always parking at crime scenes to help out or whatever. But we stopped seeing it after an episode or two.
I think it lasted more than just that, but it, yeah, definitely within the first like 4 episodes. And then it kind of faded away.
And when we would see it, it would always be parked. Not like they used it as a
yeah
a transport or whatever.
Yeah, because we'd be having coffee outside it. And in fact, just in like episode 6 or 7, they were cleaning up the cups
yeah.
on the tables outside it.
But it's funny because it would have been hilarious if they were always coming to the crime scene and giving everybody the coffee or whatever. It's like, oh, this one's catered.
Yeah, pretty bad. Yeah. You know,
essentially do it as craft services or whatever. And I thought there was a nice play on that because it was park and perk, I think it was, for the truck.
Mm.
And then when Harley's going to open up a PI agency at the end, it's Perk and Pawn, because his friend had always said it would be fun to have a pawn shop as well. So we'll see if they go anywhere with that, if they get a second season.
Yeah. When I wasn't entirely sure how to take the PI office, in part because Harley went to such great lengths to get an office at the police department. And then pretty much he gets the office, he sets up the office, we never see the office again.
Yeah, he never seemed to use it. I don't know if him switching to a PI thing makes sense or not. And it may be that that's just somewhere he can hang his shingle. But Dave kind of works there and that's another venue to bring in cases.
And that's true. And that gets them beyond the standard police case.
Yeah.
It does open a lot of doors in that respect.
All of that's provided it gets a second season.
Yeah. Very true.
And I'm not sure it will.
I don't know which way to guess. I mean, it was a summer series down here. I don't know when it aired or how well it did up in Canada.
And maybe that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking it aired earlier in Canada. So if they were going to pick it up, you would think they would have had time to do that. When we skimmed the IMDb page, I didn't see anything that seemed to indicate people are like currently talking about it. I mean, it had one piece of trivia for the whole season.
Yeah, but it did its casting announcements, it's big, it's going into production, etc., a full year before it aired.
Yeah.
So I think it may just be kind of a slow roll show because it's not a major network show.
Yeah, the fact that it's airing in the States on WGN versus even a I don't want to say a regular cable network, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's possible it'll go for another season or so. I wouldn't be adverse to that. It's a fun show. It's nice. It's lighthearted. It's got a good murder mystery kind of thing to it.
I like the murder mysteries because they played well for me. I liked the sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
I found their sense of humor funny. It matched mine. And the humorous moments didn't feel forced.
The interplay between the characters was fun. They felt like they were childhood friends years later.
Yeah, yeah. And I enjoyed watching that dynamic.
Well, and it was also fun in terms of the humor where Harley Carter would just make a complete mess of something because he didn't think, he didn't, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Like when he's first at a point where they're going to tell somebody that somebody's died.
Yes.
And he gets warned, you don't know how people are going to take it, just don't blurt it out, that kind of thing. Okay, you just go do that, I'll just stand here. Somebody comes up, oh, hey, aren't you Harley Carter? What are you doing here? Aren't you working with the police? Oh, yeah, we're investigating blah, blah, blah's death. And the person just about faints. I think she did faint.
She did faint. Yeah, her chin hit his knee on the way down because he had a problem trying to catch her. And they were in the midst of trying to set up for a selfie as yeah. he blurted it out. It was hilarious every which way you looked at it.
And you can see that dawning out of his face of, I just blew it, didn't I?
Yes. Kind of a. Yeah, yeah.
He's simultaneously got that almost full of himself, yet messed up again, didn't I? Kind of.
Yeah.
Aspect to it. And again, Jerry O'Connell is got a good sense of comedy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And doesn't take anything, at least on this, too seriously. So he was a good pick for this.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also what surprised me about the final episode being a lot more kind of somber.
There was no comic relief to that episode.
And it would have been out of place there.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was a bad choice. But if you were to only see the final episode or any other episode in just those two kind of a deal, I'm not saying it would feel schizophrenic, but...
It would.
There are certain episodes where, because of the nature of the story, it's going to have a different vibe to it.
The only reason the final episode made sense is because in the pilot, his mother going missing, being dead, is brought up, and because it's in the opening credits of every episode.
But even when it was brought up, it was pretty much, other than why he was raised by Koji and Dot and stuff, and even then he was raised by them, not clear that she had died or whatnot. It's like the last 30 seconds when he's in the room and you see the mystery board.
Yeah.
And if you don't catch that there, you don't even really get the part of the opening credits that makes sense.
Well, and I spent a large portion of the 10 episodes thinking, okay, where is Anne Carter? Is she missing? I mean, is she actually dead? Are we definitive? Yes,
I was expecting her to come back at the end.
Yeah, so I knew as soon as the agent delivered the script saying that there's going to be an episode of Call Carter, where we figure out what happened to your mom, that something about that was basically going to make it go wrong in terms of figuring out what happened with mom.
Yeah, I was...
I was clear that they had solved the mystery as kids. I was unclear they had put someone in prison for murder, much less a serial killer.
Yeah, that part was not clear. I think they could have set that part of the premise and backstory up a lot better earlier on. And when it turns out the police chief guy had worked the case and all that, that seemed to come out of the blue.
Yeah.
And I think they missed an opportunity there of him having referenced early on, and maybe they didn't, I missed it, to Carter, of, I knew your mom, that didn't go well, get the hell out.
Yeah.
And because that would have had a very interesting ramification at the end where he realized he feels he failed the mother and he doesn't want the kid to die.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely puts the I don't want you here and the gruffness in a totally different light that we've been seeing through the previous 9 episodes. But if there was a line like that, I certainly never caught it. And yeah. I would have appreciated it.
I think they could have made it clear that he had a sense of responsibility.
Yeah.
That he's now able to not act as a father figure, but something.
No, but he feels he let down one of the citizens. And he has a great few lines, as does the other cop, when they're talking to the Mounties that went bad. About, you know, this guy wasn't just a mule. He was a person. He was one of our citizens. We have vowed to protect all of our citizens.
Yeah, he was a citizen you were duty-bound to protect.
Yeah.
They had some good lines like that just throughout, either where they hit something kind of on the nose or, you know, other kind of turns of phrases or whatever. None that were just, oh my God, that was brilliant, but they were good.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a well-written show.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could have been a little tighter here and there. I'm not saying it was a perfectly written show, but...
No, and some of the mysteries could have been more difficult. And there were times when I totally agreed with the Harley Carter character when he's saying, okay, we're at this part in the story, so now this should happen. Or at one point, and it may have even been in the first episode, where he's looking over and he's going, wait, the guy with the gun, we've never seen him before. That can't happen.
Yeah, it's got to be somebody we've met.
Yes.
That was first or second episode, I forget which. And yeah, there were aspects of that sometimes work better for me than others. And I think also while they fleshed out the supporting cast well, a few of them, like the morgue medical examiner and the forensics guy, a little bit of a one note kind of a thing. But they played different aspects of the note pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, particularly with the forensics guy and Harley's kind of back and forth, where a couple of times Harley's, just humor me and check. And he's like, well, you're right. You know, kind of a...
Yeah.
The guy's not the complete idiot. Even though he's wrong most of the time, doesn't mean he's wrong all the time, kind of.
Well, and the forensics guy, in the case I'm thinking of, was going on assumption.
Yes.
99 out of 100 times, this is the situation. Therefore, I don't need to check, because 99 times out of 100, I know the answer.
It's a what are the odds this guy's crazy theory is right?
Yeah, but Harley's attitude is just in case this is the one in 100 yeah. time. And I think that's part of what I enjoyed about the character, is he was always willing to take a chance and see if it was the one in 100 time.
Without being the crazy crackpot theorist all the time.
True, but he was willing to sneak into houses and drag Dave along with him.
Yes, there are quite a few times he either bent or completely broke the law.
And ended up in the back of squad cars.
Yeah.
I think that the cop was more than a little bit pissed off when he got caught breaking into, I forget what, business. And she shows up to say, you know, do you want to press charges? And they're sort of like, are you kidding? We want his autograph.
Yes. There were just enough people in this small town that were big fans.
Yes, yes.
That helped.
Yeah.
And they played the celebrity card well in terms of not too often and appropriately so.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a couple of times where it's like, how would you not know somebody who's got, you know, a major TV show and a huge scandal, even if you don't watch the show?
Yeah.
People become aware of these things.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's why the huge scandal worked for me in this case. Because a lot of times the huge scandal to get them out of Hollywood or out of the acting kind of annoys me.
Yeah.
Kind of a, okay, is that what we now always fall back on?
What I liked is they showed the scandal. They showed the equivalent of Entertainment Tonight footage where he's finding out his wife slept with somebody. His yeah. best friend or whatever. And you see that spiral out kind of a thing.
Yeah, the red carpet blowout.
Yeah.
And then cut to him basically sitting by the lake in the backyard with the, no, not going back to Hollywood anytime soon.
Well, and it played well as to why he was a fish out of water in Hollywood and he's better off back home.
Yeah, the one thing they didn't do was an episode where some paparazzi went up to the middle of nowhere to get shots of the, now that he's not in Hollywood, his life has fallen apart for the tabloids.
Kind of do the equivalent of the E! True Hollywood Story, kind of a, he fell to great depths, sort of.
Either that or just some photographer trying to get the tabloid shots of, now that his life is in the dumps, he's gained 80 pounds, this, that, and the other, whatever fake news you want.
Fallen off the wagon in some way, shape, or form, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And what I'm thinking would have been hilarious is if this photographer is following him around for the first third of the episode, and at some point they realize that paparazzi has accidentally gotten a photograph of something they need the picture of.
Yeah, instead of saying, go away, you bother me, it's I need your camera.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that would have been interesting to do, and I don't know how they would have worked it, but take a few of the people from up in that town of Bishop to Hollywood.
Yes.
They've got to go in his world for a little.
Yeah.
He's on his deathbed and they need something that can cure him. Something. But to have them have to investigate his life a little bit and understand him a little better.
Yeah.
So there are a couple of other things they could have done, but I felt that they had a premise. They played it well. They set it up reasonably well. Again, a few things a little better could have been done.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an entertaining show.
Yeah. Well, and like I said before, I think the fact that the second tier characters were as entertaining as the first tier, Dot, Koji, etc., that for me made the difference and kept me coming back.
And pretty much each one got a chance to shine in at least one or two episodes.
Yeah.
None were really just token characters. Even the other cop, I forget his name.
Rafalski or something to that effect.
When the station was under siege, he got a I don't say chance to shine, but a chance in the spotlight. How about that?
Yeah.
And a few things like that. That was fun. They built up a bit of a sense of community mm-hmm. where they could.
Yeah.
So I give them credit for that. It didn't feel like there were a lot of people that were just kind of props or placeholders.
Well, I saw one article, because I did go looking for information on this one, kind of a why haven't I heard about it search. And I saw one interview with Jerry O'Connell, and he said they filmed in a very small town
mm-hmm.
in Canada, the only one other TV show films in. And he said the amazing thing for him as an actor was he's gotten a little too accustomed to filming in Hollywood, in New York, in places they're overrun by film crews. And he said so many of those environments, people are like, man, I can't park the darn film crew. Blah, blah, blah. And he said, whereas here, when you're one of only two film crews that's come and they feel like you're highlighting their town, which I think they did a good job
of. Yeah, they did.
And stuff. He said, instead, you show up at a location in the morning and you get ready to set up a shot. And the homeowner comes and says, you know, I know the contract said you weren't going to go in the house, but if it would make it easier, let me open up the house so that you can be inside the house, because that may help you get better shots.
Yeah.
And he said, just everywhere we turned, instead of being mad at the access that had been negotiated and feeling we were taking too much, they were offering us more and more access.
That speaks well of the other show.
That's what I was thinking too, yeah.
Because if the first show to do it was just hellacious and horrible, people would be like, get the hell out. But if it was a good experience, you know, I can see that. What was the other show? Because I know Haven used the police building and a few other shots of the city.
It wasn't Haven, because it's another Canadian show that's currently airing. Because Jerry O'Connell was saying he wouldn't mind a crossover with it.
Oh, interesting. I'm curious what that is.
Yeah, I've forgotten.
Because the headquarters I think they used for the police here seemed very similar, if not the same building, as the one from Haven.
That's interesting.
I could be wrong about that. And there were a couple of things about the city shots or whatever. They maybe they just used common footage. Yeah. I don't know.
They had some beautiful lakes and just out in nature, if you will, areas that they went and shot at. It was just a beautiful area.
Yeah, they did a good job finding a, I won't say a quaint, secluded place, but something where, you know, a Hollywood actor could get away from it all.
Yeah.
But big enough to have enough crimes that somebody's dying every week like clockwork.
Now, technically, they didn't always die. Sometimes they just got shot at.
True, true. But that's part and parcel of the murder mystery genre.
I think that's why I liked Murder, She Wrote. She traveled.
There is an aspect of how do you get the person to the crime on a regular basis.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they've got to go. It's when you've got the dinner party and somebody croaks every week, people stop coming.
Yes.
That's just the way it goes.
Those are bad dinner parties to attend.
Yeah. The other thing I was starting to wonder by the end, and they did kind of answer a little of this question, is Jerry O'Connell's married.
Yes.
And I was wondering, like, what is his wife, Rebecca Romijn, doing during all of this time? She actually guest starred there at the end.
Yeah.
So.
For the most part, I thought they did really well opposite one another. There was one scene where it looked like they were having a little problems. They were supposed to be ex-lovers fighting.
Yeah.
And they were having a little problem selling the, we kind of hate each other in some respects, but we work well together.
What's funny is in her last show, he guest starred in the final episode of the first season.
Yes.
Librarians. So again, I'm curious if they keep going with this or not. I'm also curious why we've got this sudden influx of the celebrity detectives.
Yeah, it is an interesting subgenre that is exploding, and I'm not sure why. I mean, I'm trying to think it could connect to the whole fake news, people want to investigate and get the truth, you know, mentality that's currently going on in our culture. And there's also the constant belief, I think, in Hollywood that people just kind of burn out on the Hollywood experience after a certain amount of time and need to leave it.
I think there's the aspect of the Hollywood burnout, the everybody likes a celebrity, and it's gotten to where you need to have, if you want to do a detective show, you've got to have something that sets the show apart from the bazillion other shows that are and have been previously done.
And celebrity opens doors.
Yeah.
So I can see where, from a writer's perspective, as gimmicks go, it's a good one.
Well, and it also allows the characters to do the throw money at a problem kind of a thing, or cash in on the celebrity but to get access or something.
Yeah.
Again, that opening of doors.
Yeah.
Because it's either that or you get to something like Person of Interest, where you've got a second level mystery of, well, this person's involved, but are they the murderer or the victim kind of a thing?
Yeah.
You know, are going to be involved, I should say. Or you get something like Monk, where you've got just an incredibly quirky detective to follow.
Well, I've been watching the Garage Sale Mysteries movies on Hallmark Movies and Mysteries. And what I like is the basic premise that there's a owner of an antique store who goes to garage sales, estate sales, etc., and buys stuff for her store. And in each movie, she finds something that she's bought that turns out to be a piece of evidence or a clue in a crime the police need to investigate.
Well, and that kind of amateur detective is a staple of the detective stuff. And you're almost doing a reversal of it by having it be an amateur detective who's a celebrity.
Yeah.
And to again, it's common for them to have played one on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore think they know what they're doing when they really don't.
Yeah.
So kind of underscore that amateurness of it.
Well, and that was one of the things that in the second half of the season, they kind of begrudgingly admitted, with the cop now saying, you know, not to take one of Harley's statements, but now we know who the star of the movie is.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I finally come to realize maybe it's not all foolishness.
Well, and there's also the old saying of write what you know. So what's a TV writer going to write about but TV?
Yeah.
So I think there's a little self-reflexive nature there that kind of makes sense. But I don't know, the fact that we're getting a bunch of them in short order and such is just interesting. And these sort of fads come and go.
Well, I'm wondering also if Castle, having such a successful run, has anything to do with
it. I think so. Certainly, I think some of these are following a similar pattern to it without being completely derivative. They're going in a little bit different direction. Certainly, there are aspects of Carter that are reminiscent of Castle. If it had happened while Castle was still going or a little shortly thereafter, I don't know. It seems a little late in the game for that. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying, why the delay?
Yeah.
Were they waiting for that to play out and then do this?
Sometimes people don't want to be in direct competition, but when something goes off the air and they realize, hey, people are wishing that was still on the air, can we come up with something to fill the empty shoes it left?
That's true. You avoid kind of that psych mentalist.
Yes.
Flip sides of the same coin almost sort of thing.
Yeah.
And having a bit of free rein of, yeah, they did it, but then they're done and we can do it better.
Yeah.
So I can totally see that. 10 episodes. So short season.
Short season, but there were no filler episodes. For me, it was very episodic, which I like.
You say no filler episodes, and I agree with you, other than the whole what happened with his mom felt like it was going to be the arc for the season. And we got no movement on that other than a tangential mention or two here and there at best.
See, if they had not had him go into the room with the bulletin board at the end of the pilot, I wouldn't have felt that way.
To me, it was both that and it being in the opening credits.
Agreed. And I keep wondering, did they put that in the opening credits because they felt that was part of his motivation?
Either way, to me, it almost made it feel like most of the season was filler.
That's interesting.
And I'm not saying it was, yeah. But you see where I'm going with that. Yeah.
See, to me, instead of being an arc season, it was very much an episodic season.
I would agree. It was heavy on the episodic stuff with enough subplots in terms of the relationships and things like that. That, you know, if you miss one, you don't. It's not like, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah.
But you miss a tiny little bit here and there.
Yeah. Well, boyfriend Rick, the divorce papers.
Yeah.
I mean, little things happened.
They give the sense that life is happening during these cases versus there have been some shows where it's like they work the case and you've got no idea if they've got a personal life.
Yeah.
It's not that kind of show. So it was fun. I don't think it's, oh my God, you've got to watch this. I also don't think it's a geez, you should avoid it either. Don't know how the ratings were, so don't know on those grounds whether they really ought to bring it back or not. But it's got a good cast. It's got good writing. It'd be fun to see kind of where it goes from here if they continue with it.
I liked the vibe. I enjoyed it. For me, it was a relaxing, I guess, cozy mystery.
It was fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the season ended on a note where, yeah, there's more they could do, but it didn't end on a cheesy cliffhanger or something like that where it's like, geez, you left me hanging.
Yeah.
So on those grounds, I'm ironically more inclined to say, yeah, continue with it than if they're going for the cheaper, you've got to let me continue with it. Otherwise, you won't know what happened.
Yeah.
I always hate that kind of cliffhanger ending.
Well, and they didn't make me feel like they had to go in a particular direction, even the private investigator direction. Because Harley's whole, well, I spent $140 on the sign for the window. Yeah.
They could just as easily pick up in a second season with that shutting down. And, well, that didn't go well.
Either that or you didn't mention you hadn't gotten the lease on the space, Harley.
Yes, or that it wasn't set up for this, or you didn't have the whatever paperwork to turn it into a coffee place. I mean, there's half a dozen ways they could backpedal on that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And pretty humorously.
Yes, and in character.
Yes.
And I think that's part of what I like about the show.
Yeah, it definitely had its unique sensibility to it that certainly, I think, sets it apart from a lot of other shows in a good way.
If it comes back, I think it needs our three main leads.
Yes.
I think it needs Dot.
I would be hard-pressed to suggest any character changes.
See, that's what I was thinking. I mean, Koji wasn't in every single episode, but I really like Koji when they use him.
The one character that was in about half the episodes that I think would be the one you'd have to make a status quo change for to bring back is the agent.
Well, and I mean, technically, Harley's not going to do Call Carter. That doesn't mean the agent isn't trying to still get him work and trying to keep him alive in Hollywood.
Yeah, it just takes a little bit of a different vibe. It's a status quo change of some sort, not like a job change necessarily. Yeah. And again, when they used him to set up the Kiki Loki commercial and stuff, that was well done.
That really was. I enjoyed the Japanese commercial. That was funny.
I would like to see if they do a second season because they name dropped him Neil Patrick Harris guest starring.
Oh, that'd be funny, yes.
Just, I think that'd be hilarious. Yeah. Whether they could get him or not, I don't know. But have him basically be a bit upset that his role didn't happen because...
Okay, you know what I want in a second season if they get one? I want Charlie O'Connell to show up in Bishop because he's doing some background research while he has, you know, Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving, whatever it is, break from the show because he got recast into Call Carter at the last second.
He replaces.
Yes.
Yeah. I would definitely have him, I would almost have that be kind of a subplot of Harley is having to come to grips with having been seamlessly replaced in his show.
Yes, yes.
The guy doesn't even look like me or whatever, and it's his brother.
Yes.
That would be funny. Because I don't know what else his brother has done really since Sliders. I haven't looked, so I don't know.
I think he did a season of The Bachelor.
Well, that's interesting. Did not know that.
Not that I've watched, so I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure someone told me at one point that this actor they'd never heard of. And I was like, well, at least I've heard of him as an actor.
Well, and they could probably get him for a couple of days of shooting to do things that you could then drop throughout the season or whatever.
Well, I mean, if you have basically people showing up at Harley's place and he's turning off the TV in disgust as part of Call Carter is on.
I would just have it be they see a clip or there's an Entertainment Tonight sort of a thing.
Yep.
It turns out this guy's not only replaced him in the show, but he's dating the wife.
Yes.
There are a lot of things they could do to just... Harley who?
Yeah. Well, and you could do the dating the wife with pictures on tabloids and magazines.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be funny.
So there's some fun stuff they could do there. I was a little surprised his brother didn't show up at all.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Hopefully they get a chance for a second season, but again, I haven't heard anything either way.
Yeah.
So anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.